welcome you back to another edition of Inside Boxing Live. Chris wants to say that it is the People's Champions Boxing Podcast. Chris Algieri, former 140-pound champion, and Dan Canobi every single week. Took a little bit of a longer break this time, but we're back in your life for a fun episode today with some mailbag questions, some updates on a lot of fights that are being made, and one fight in particular that's not being made. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing well. We are the uncrowned champion of boxing podcasts out there, but the people know.
People do know. Go ahead and leave us a 5-star rating and review. Subscribe to the podcast on YouTube if you haven't. There was a really nice, A really nice review left for us on iTunes, and I was going to send it to you last night, but I forgot. It's titled, "These Guys Deliver." 5 stars. Every week, these guys have the energy, the content, the insight, and the humor. I look forward to it, and I've yet to be disappointed by a single podcast. They deserve all the props they're getting and more.
That's a 5-star review right there. That makes me happy. But I mean, listen, homeboy's right. Or girl. I don't know who wrote that, but
I don't know. A very, very great listener. So I thank you to that person and everyone out there that is listening to the show, to do all that good stuff to keep the lights on. And the lights might go off during this podcast because Ronnie isn't in the room. This happened last time. And Ronnie's not in the room, the light goes off. So if the light goes off, I'll have to get up. Chris, this episode is brought to you by DraftKings. Getting on the action with the DraftKings Sportsbook app. It's the official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers who deposit $5 or more can get a no-sweat bet up to $100,000 back in bonus bets. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Use code IBL. New customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,000 in your if your first bet loses. I've never lost a bet in my life. Asterisk. Only on the DraftKings Sportsbook with code IBL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-100-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, you can call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of the Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. No sweat bet per new customer. It's only one of those issued as one bonus bet based on the amount of initial losing bet. Bonus bet expires 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/promos for deposit, wagering, and eligibility restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. Done with that. Chris, there's a biggest story in boxing, Chris. The biggest story in boxing remains. Who is Canelo Alvarez going to fight on May 4th? The timeline to this fight and his opponent is just getting weirder and sillier by the day. Bear with me a second, Chris. I'm going to explain to you the timeline, all right? So Canelo holds a press conference in Mexico. He announces that he's going to have a press conference in Mexico, and everyone was speculating that he was going to retire. He was going to lower the prices of oxtail. He was going to announce a run for presidency. Everything. It had the Twitter world and boxing world abuzz. It turns out that he's just going to extend his contract with TV Azteca, Box Tech Azteca over there. So all his, it's pretty much business as usual, but it's great press for that Mexican network. So he holds his press conference in Mexico where he says he will be fighting on May 4th. He rules out Jaime Munguia. He says it will be an American opponent. That keeps David Benavidez in the running, keeps Terrence Crawford in the running, keeps Jermall Charlo in the running. That's until reports say that Canelo has no plans to fight Benavidez in 2024. He says he'd gain nothing by beating the smaller Crawford. And Jermall Charlo offers us a video from a jet ski somewhere in the islands where he says that I have had a single conversation with Al Heyman since my fight, which was in November.
While chugging rum runners.
While looking a little toasted. So that's the latest with Canelo. I have no idea what to expect anymore.
The biggest story in boxing world is that there's no story around Canelo. That's Canelo. There's no story. Dude, that announcement to make an announcement to not really announce anything was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in terms of boxing media. There was so much hype and discussion going on around that. Biggest letdown I've had in a long time when it came.
What did you think it was going to be?
I thought he was going to announce that he's fighting Charlo, and then that he was going to be fighting. I was hoping, I was being optimistic, CA, which I'm almost never these days, that he was going to fight Benavidez in September, or he was going to announce that it was Crawford in September, which was going to piss me off. But I thought it was going to be something. It was literally just to hype up the Azteca deal, which.
Good for them.
Good for them. Great for them. Great for them. Good for him, too, I'm sure. I'm sure it's going to be good for him, money wise.
I think it's cool that his fights are free for the people of Mexico.
Yeah, that's awesome. But. I don't know, man. He's not doing us any favors as boxing fans lately.
I don't know who he's going to fight. I understand like this conversation. He's Canelo. He can do whatever he wants. He's earned the right.
That's not true. You cannot. If you are the face of the sport, you cannot do whatever you want. You can, but it's going to hurt your legacy. You can, but you're going to get a lot of flack from everyone around you. You can, but people are going to talk shit. And we all know he doesn't like when people talk shit. So we're going to, if you don't fight David Menendez, we're going to talk shit. We are too. I'm a pro Canelo guy. I'm going to talk shit if he doesn't fight Benavidez.
Of course, it's not even like hating, quote unquote. You're not saying anything.
No, it's not hate at all. I like Canelo. I really like Canelo.
It's the fight. It's the most obvious fight. It's that's why this whole game that we're playing, this wacky timeline, we can't find an opponent. The opponent has been there for the last year and a half. It's David Benavidez, and if it's not September. And it feels like it's never going to happen. It's obviously not going to happen in May unless something crazy happens. But and even the WBC says they're going to issue Suleiman says they're going to issue they're going to issue Benavidez as his mandatory in March. I don't know what they were waiting for that. But we're running out of opponents here. And just because Charlo says that he hasn't spoken to Al Haymon since November,
yeah, that doesn't mean anything.
I think Charlo's the favorite. I still think it's a PBC fight that could be made. He showed up or he called into a streamer's Aiden Ross's stream, and he was drunk the other night asking to commentate on one of his things, and he says he's bigger than Javante Davis. Like, you can say what you want about Jamal, hasn't fought in forever. No one's really excited about that fight. But I don't know. I my guess would be Jamal Charlo to fight Canelo next.
It's gonna be Jamal. I mean, I'm not sure of anything, especially lately when it comes to Canelo and what's gonna happen. But it just, I mean, the writing has been on the wall, and it just feels like lately, whatever the first thing you hear, you know, even in a long line of, it's always the first thing. Like the Devin Haney, Ryan Garcia thing. We heard that one first. We're like, oh, and then it was all these different guys. And then we go back to that. We're back to that. There's a lot of just bait and switch going on, but it's really not. It's all smoke and mirrors. And it seems like, especially with the announcement from last week from Canelo, it's a lot of smoke and mirrors. I think it's just going to be Charlo.
And there's a lot of rumors going around too. None of them have been, confirmed by anyone that Canelo will be leaving the PBC. Like there's money issues with PBC. And they can't guarantee the $35 million for Canelo. So that kind of got shot down on Twitter. We're seeing a lot of people throw out a lot of rumors. It's interesting because it's February 20th, right? His fight is May 4th. He says he will be fighting May 4th. It's just a matter of who. So that's what the boxing world is waiting on.
With that new deal with Azteca, he's definitely going to be fighting. He could fight a cab driver. If it's free for the Mexican fans, they're not going to care.
Right, but if there's ever any doubt of who the face of boxing was, it's still Canelo, because this guy said, I have an announcement to make on Tuesday. He said this on Super Bowl.
And we're all there, bated breath.
Right?
And it was nothing.
He still got it. It's Canelo, man. He's still the guy that moves the needle. Got everyone speculating, people talking about him retiring. One thing he did say was that he was going to fight for another 4 or 5 more years, which is, I love that. That's like at least 10 more fights.
A long time.
8 to 10 more fights, we'll see. So he fights Benavidez and loses. I mean, he'll have to have a rematch there. But are you a little shocked that it's not Benavidez? Like, are you a little shocked that, like, what's going on with this? Because I don't like to use the word ducked. I don't really believe that fighters do that. But what the hell is going on with Canelo not wanting to fight David Benavidez?
Listen, I never expected Benavidez to be in May, but I really did expect it to be in September. And if it doesn't happen in September, it's never going to happen. And that sucks. That really sucks for fight fans. That sucks for Canelo. That really sucks for David Benavidez. But this is just weird, and it's getting weirder. If it was going to be Jamal Charlo, which nobody wants, right? Nobody wants except for Charlo and Al Haymon, and probably Canelo. But if they are to make that fight and then he fights Benavidez in September, and I've said this before on the show, I'm okay. I can deal with Charlo. We got Benavidez coming in September. But if he fights Charlo in May and then doesn't fight Benavidez in September and doesn't fight Munguia in September and ends up fighting anyone else, X, that X could be Crawford. I am, dude, I might have to jump off the Canelo train because, dude, you have the most viable contender possible to fight. And it makes such sense. And it's a commercial blockbuster. How do you not take that fight? It's crazy. But on top of all of that, the governing bodies who are allowing him to sit on these belts is disgusting. David Benavidez deserves to be fighting for these belts. If Canelo's not going to fight him, strip those belts. Let David fight him. Because David will fight David Morrell. Benavidez will step in and fight David Morrell for one of those titles. Because he's that dude. And listen, we want the best fights in the world. We want champions. We want the guys with the belts to be the best guys who are fighting the best guys. Not the face who could just sit on belts.
It's just weird. Like, but why do you think he doesn't want to fight? Do you think he's not scared? Like, do you think he just can't win? Like, what do you think his reasoning is for not wanting to fight Benavidez?
I don't think Canelo's scared of anyone. I mean, I don't know how much he has control because there's always handlers, right? There's always people around guys who think they should fight a guy or shouldn't fight a guy. I don't really know what the holdup is. And he hasn't really given a good excuse. He hasn't given really any excuse why he's not fighting David Benavidez, which is not good either. I mean, it's a tough style for sure. I don't know for sure that Canelo beats David Benavidez, even if they fight right now. I still think like people who are saying, David will blow him out. I don't really see that. Cause there are people saying that and people who really know boxing are saying that. I think it's a good fight either way. And I don't know, man, especially Mexican legends. They're known for fighting the toughest guys around and even losing. It's okay. And getting beat up bad. Like guys lose, De La Hoya beat the hell out of Chavez Sr. twice and it didn't knock any luster off of Chavez. So I don't know, man. It's a very weird situation.
Very weird situation. If you take a look at like some of Canelo's last three fights, Jermell Charlo, who has shown to be put up a goose egg in that fight, John Ryder.
Also, we got to remember Jermell Charlo is a 54 pounder. They fought at 168.
He fought a 54 pounder in Charlo. He fought John Ryder, which was like a voluntary defense or whatever defense. And then
Gennady. Sounds a tough dude, but if you're the face of boxing, that's not the guy we want to see you in with.
Right, and Gennady Golovkin, those were his last three fights, so he's definitely due for a big one. He's due
to Gennady 5 years too late, but yeah, okay.
Definitely due to fight Benavidez, definitely due to give the fans what they want. It's very strange. I've really run out of thoughts on it, and we're just not going to wait because eventually they're going to have to announce it. It's February 20th. They're going to have to announce it soon. It's going to be
Seems like an age thing, honestly, because if you look at all the guys he's fighting recently, everyone's over the age of 30. Actually, they're all over this age of 32, I think. They're all 32 and they're smaller. And the guys that are younger are smaller. Charlo's what, 33?
Yeah.
Coming up two weight classes. John Ryder's just turned 36. I think when they fought, he was 34 or 35 and is currently retired. Golovkin was 40 when they fought.
Yeah. Not great.
They're all older guys.
Not great. He's got to, I understand he's had one hell of a resume. And yes, I do to a certain extent. He's able to call his shots, but I thought he was re-energized in that Canelo fight. I thought he was ready to Charlo fight. I thought he was ready to take on all comers.
Look great. Right, he did look there. Great against a guy who didn't want to fight. Yeah,
there's a fight right there waiting for you to have a huge one, Benavidez, and hopefully that happens.
But Dan, to your point about him, like in his legacy and what he's already done, and it's hard to knock him because of what he's already done. If that's the case, and you just want to fight, kind of showcase fights and not really be in there, those belts got to come off. They got to come off your body. You can't be the top of a division. You can be the face of the sport, but you can't be the champion. If you're not willing to fight the toughest guys around, if you're not willing to fight the contenders, and David Benavidez is the most earned potential contender there is around. If you're not willing to fight that guy or those guys, you shouldn't be champ. You can be the face. You can go out. You can go fight Conor McGregor. I don't care. But you can't be the champion.
Yeah, I don't think Suleiman will do that. I don't think Suleiman is going to strip Canelo Alvarez. That is his guy. That is the WBC is so aligned with the country of Mexico, and it would be. I don't think he'll do it. He's getting almost backed into a corner, Suleiman, the WBC. We'll see what they do. I don't think he'll do that. That's the latest with Canelo. So hopefully, we have some answers soon.
The latest is there is no latest. That's.
It kind of reminds me of Mayweather. Like Mayweather would, his opponents would drag out, and we would wait until like around now, like February, like first month of March, and then for those May fights, and then we would get an announcement, and we'd be like not so excited before it, and then once the fight comes around, we get excited because it was Mayweather, or we get excited because it's Canelo. So, We'll say Jack Catterall is fighting Josh Taylor. April 27th, Bad Blood. They're on stage this week, smacking each other, twisting each other's nipples, pushing each other, kicking each other. Definitely Bad Blood. I think there's a lot of Bad Blood. I don't think that the fight will live up to the Bad Blood, because the first fight, if you really remember, really wasn't that good of a fight. The only reason why it was memorable was because it was a bad decision, and fans who did not like Josh Taylor saw him lose and be so defiant in that loss that he was gifted. They're finally going to fight in a rematch 2 years later, April 27th. Grudge match. It's fine. I have no problem with grudge matches. I don't think it has any bearing on the titles in the 140. It's just a good old-fashioned grudge match.
Yeah, I was saying that this fight is 2 years too late, and it's lost a lot of luster, and people don't care as much. But, you know, you can pump some new lifeblood into it by having each other shove each other and grab each other's nipples and get punched in the face. I would put touching a man's nipples and grabbing his beard the way that Charlo did to Plant are both punch-in-the-faceable offenses. And Jack went to the strangle, the hand, the choke on the hand. I disagree on that. You touch my nipples, I'm cracking you in your jaw. I don't. That's not cool.
You don't see too many nipple twists at press conferences.
No. Josh has been wild at these press conferences. Like he's. I saw a video of him bringing a book or something over, and then tried to hit Jack with a chair.
I legitimately think they hate each other.
Oh, absolutely. But no, I think the grudge is real. I mean, they have good reason for it. But like you said, the first fight wasn't that great. And literally, has Jack Catterall ever been in a good fight? Has he ever been in a fight where you're like, man, that was fun to watch?
Not in a lot of bangers. He'll be like, he'll be sound. Like he'll win a fight.
That was good. He's a good fighter, a good counterpuncher. But like, he's not a very memorable guy in terms of the way he fights.
And how much does Taylor have left after that, you know, Teofimo beatdown? And seems like he's 140. He's not really not his division, and 147. He's not big enough. Like
he didn't look very fit at these press conferences either.
He looks pretty big. That's April 27th. You could drop that into like a very loaded five or six week stretch of the boxing schedule. So that would be a fun one to kind of just a good old fashioned grudge match. This weekend, Edgar Belanga is back in action in Orlando. Padraig McCrory, a Brit. Berlanga, we know the story about Berlanga by now, right? He's the flesh in the pan that once was, and now he's trying to regain that knockout streak, or regain that knockout fierceness, and he's got a lot of decisions back-to-back-to-back, and he's kind of waiting in the wings. I can fight Canelo. I can fight Munguia. I can fight this guy. Got to get past McCrory. If he knocks out McCrory, he needs a knockout badly for longer. Yep. I believe that. I really do. Like, a win is not enough. He needs a knockout and then get some momentum.
Yeah, he needs to snap that drought that he's had. 16 straight first round knockouts, then 5 straight decisions. And when you're known as the monster, you can't have 5 straight decisions. Granted, he's fought much better opposition. He definitely stepped up. He had some injuries to recover from. He tore his bicep in that fight with that Argentinian guy who's super tough. He's had a little bit of a rocky road, but I thought he looked good against Quigley his last fight. Quigley, too small, not enough firepower. But still, and Quigley put up a good show, and Berlanga showed some of his old chops in there. And I think he got better as the fight went on. So I think he's going to take that momentum that he has from the Quigley fight. He's got another Irishman in front of him. But this guy is a little different than Quigley. He's a little more confident. I think he's got a little more power. Definitely more of a 68 pounder, but I don't think he's as good as Quigley in terms of his boxing skills. And Quigley put on a great performance that night. And he fought very, very well. He had Andy Lee in his corner, and they had a great game plan. They just didn't have enough firepower, like I said. But I think this guy presents some things that'll make this fight fun while it lasts. But there's going to be a lot of holes and a lot of opportunities for Belanga to land. And I think we potentially could see the end of that drought.
I would like to see a knockout. I like to see Berlanga. He's a character. Get back into the mix.
He can fight too, man. He's fun when he's on.
It hasn't been on in quite a while. The Quigley fight went the distance. Romer Alexis Angulo, 10-round distance. Steve Rolls, 10-round distance. Marcelo.
Steve Correa. Rolls is good though, man. Steve Rolls is a tough guy.
Yeah, I've called a bunch of his fights. He went the distance with Coseres. He went the distance with Damon Nicholson. That was the first fight that went the distance in his career, was with Damon Nicholson in 2021. So hasn't had a knockout since 2020. That's crazy.
Scored a bunch of knockdowns in those fights, though, even though Quigley dropped like 2 or 3 times. I think he dropped Damon twice.
He dropped Quigley in the third, the fifth, and the 12th.
Yeah, Koceras was a war, and he tore his bicep, his left arm, his left bicep in that fight. Angulo was just a very, very poor showing. That was the worst.
That was the bite.
Yep.
That was bad. Yep. It was rock bottom for him.
And Steve Rolls is just a tough guy who fought a really good fight that night.
I'm rooting for Berlanga. I want to see more characters in boxing. Let's throw him in the mix at 168. Fight Munguia. Look at some of the awesome guys fight. In 168. Don't look at Canelo because you're not going to get him. Who knows? Maybe you
will. He might, dude. I'm telling you.
Who knows?
He might.
Maybe you will, but just get
that might him. That might be the main fight. As crazy as this is.
Munguia was in the mix for a while and
I really like that Munguia Canelo fight. I like that idea. But also I like Munguia. I like Munguia with a lot of people. He's just fun. Munguia Berlanga is a great fight. Munguia Canelo. Munguia David Benavidez. Granted, these are all across the road. They're very difficult to make, but they're all fun fights.
I think Munguia versus Berlanga will be next. It's all the zone fight. It could be
all action.
It's Matchroom versus Golden Boy. They've worked together. Mexico versus Puerto Rico. That's the fight. So Berlanga wins this. Looks good. His name automatically gets back into the forefront at 168. Also, before we get to our mailbag, Junto Nakatani is fighting this weekend.
Yeah.
Coming off of he's not his last fight, but the one before that unbelievable knockout of the year over Maloney, Andrew Maloney. He knocks him out. So this is his first fight at 118. It's coming up from 115. It's for Alejandro Santiago's WBC title. It's a good fight. It's a fun one. Nakatani is worth tuning into. He's huge at 118. He could potentially go up to 122. There's people already putting him in the ring with Inoue. But this should be a nice little fun fight between Junto Nakatani. I after that knockout, I believe he's kind of like a guy that you have to tune in if you're a boxing fan and figure out what he's got, really.
So I called a bunch of Junto's fights for Top Rank International when he came over here and fought in the States a bunch of times. He's fantastic. He's really, really, really good. Huge for the weight class, even though he's moving up. I still think he's big. He's very tall. He's very long. Great skill set, good power. But, he's got a tough fight in front of him. Santiago, we were calling that fight live, you and I, for PPV.com when Santiago beat Donaire.
Right.
Remember that. Right, and he put on a great performance against a very, very dangerous Donaire. And he showed his youthful exuberance in that fight. He threw tons of punches, really came on strong down the stretch to beat Donaire, which is not easy to do even at 39, 40 years old. The guy has a majority decision with Gary Antonio Russell. Like the guy can fight. And so this is not an easy fight for Junto Nakatani, first fight at the weight class. So I think that's it's not the first fight at the weight class.
It's not. I thought it was his first fight at 118. Pretty sure it was.
Maybe it is. I'm looking at the wrong guy.
First fight at 118, and it's a title shot. And
oh yes, it is. Yes, it is. Not again. So yeah, exactly like I said. Not an easy entry into a new weight class fighting a guy like Santiago, who's obviously been there before and knows how to deal with guys with power. Because if Donaire has nothing left, he's got a ton of power.
He's got power. If he wants to stay at 122, we got Jason Maloney. He knocked out his brother. He's the WBO champ. Emmanuel Rodriguez is the WBA champ. Of course, everyone wants to pit him against Inoue.
All Japanese affair.
That would be awesome at the Tokyo Dome. Nakatani's big. I could see him going up to 122 next. Who knows? There's plenty of time to make a fight with Inoue. Not that I think this should happen next, but I went to the ESPN fights on Friday night at the Garden. Saw our guy Joe Tess, hung out with him, saw a bunch of our listeners. It was awesome to be back in New York at a fight. There's not many of them these days. And Bruce Carrington, did you see that knockout?
Yes, I did.
Bruce, he is awesome. He is really good. And he's at 122 right now. Or excuse me, featherweight. He's at 126.
26, yeah.
Yeah, and he was his first fight on regular ESPN. He had been fighting on the undercards.
Mm-hmm.
Putting up the show on ESPN, had a nice lead in with the NBA All-Star weekend, and I'm in the backstage area and I'm watching him wait. He's waiting because there's like a 10-minute delay, because boxing always gets delayed on ESPN, even if it's a celebrity freaking basketball game. Anyway, Carrington is waiting, just waiting. You could just see like he's got so many thoughts going through his mind. He's about to make his big moment on ESPN, and I see him make his ring walk. It's the coolest thing in the world, seeing that happen. And then he goes in there, and I'm watching from the stage, and he just looks so fluid, and he has a spectacular knockout, has that crazy speech afterwards. Did you catch that? Talking, mm-hmm. He did the Tyson thing because he's from Brownsville. Place is going up for grabs, and I'm just thinking in my head, that right there, that's how you draw it up if you're Bruce Carrington. It was such a cool moment to see that. And he seems like a great kid.
Oh, he's fantastic. He's awesome.
But he's someone, you know, that they're already, like, trying to find the next American star that can beat Inoue. It's not a bad thing if he's being lumped with Inoue. It's a great thing. You need to tack on to a superstar and any way you can get publicity. But, man, I loved what I saw from Bruce Carrington. He's definitely a bona fide blue chipper.
Absolutely not. That kid is awesome. He's a great kid, too. I think the upside on him is tremendous. I just hope they don't rush him. I think he still has some more development to do. He keeps shining with his opportunities, but it's still early on. You know, he's got some maturity to get under his belt, got some experience to build. It's tough fighting some of those guys who've been around for a long time early on, because they can take a lot out of you. I always think about Felix Trinidad when he fought David Reed and when he fought Fernando Vargas. Like, yeah, they were budding young guys coming up really fast, and then you put them in with a killer like Trinidad or a killer like Inoue. It can take a lot out of a young fighter.
Yeah, I think Top Rank will handle them correctly. You know,
yeah, they always do. They're the best. They're the best developmental promotion out there.
It was awesome to see everyone over there. It's good to be back in New York fight night. The main event saw our guy Oshaki Foster with mm-hmm. a close fight with Abraham Nova. Fun fight over on
with my guy Nova. That's my dude, man.
The bearded man with the mascot. That was Friday night. Anything else happened Friday night? All right, so Keyshawn Davis. I told him I picked him to beat Pedraza, and he was cool. He was asking me what he thought about the Teofimo stuff. And I was like, well, I don't know. I was like, you're doing what Teofimo did to Lomachenko. Like, I have no problem with what you're doing. Like, you're calling out. You're looking to fight the best. You're calling out big names, which you're supposed to do. I don't think it looks forced. And he's like, all right, man. Thanks. He's like... Thing with Davis is he's looking for approval, and he's looking to see how he looked in there, and not just in the ring, but also like how he was looking afterwards, calling out Teofimo.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is no handwritten route on how to do it. Everybody's got to find their own way, and then that's the way that he's taken. Also on Friday, we had a really good fight on ProBox TV. Ramon Cardenas beat Picasso. I don't know if you saw this guy's jaw.
No,
his jaw got broken in the fifth round. I mean, there was teeth all over like that. You literally could see the break in his jaw when he got hit. First of all, we heard it ringside. It was a right handed. Was that through the headphones? Yeah. Absolutely. You heard his jaw snap. Ugh. And then the blood started flowing. And then we saw a couple clips where we could see into his mouth. Dude, teeth were like in very, very, very non-anatomical places. Really, really nasty injury that happened. Unfortunately, because it was really turning out to be a good fight. Not that it wasn't, but it was starting to heat up.
Yeah, there was a lot of fights Friday night. It was funny because boxing, there was nothing Saturday, but there was like four shows Friday. It's just boxing in a nutshell. Let's get to the mailbag. A lot of good questions. Thank you to everyone who sent us questions on YouTube, on Twitter, on Instagram, everywhere. We'll start off with Four Corners Boxing. This is... directed at you, Chris. Based off Chris's understanding of the industry, will we see PBC fighters start to go to other promoters to stay active, or is this just a slow transition to another network and PBC will be back in business as usual second half of this year?
I think they're going to lose some fighters, and they already have. You know, you saw Super Gamatias take a jump ship. And for him, I think it makes a lot of sense because he is not a spring chicken. He's 31 years old. He has a title, but he has not made any money yet. He cannot be on the PBC track where you fight once a year. He needs to get active. He needs the big fights. So jumping over to Matchroom, I think was a brilliant idea for him and his team, because there's a lot of guys for him to fight over there, and he's one of those guys. He's willing to fight anybody because he needs to. So I think that Al is going to lose some guys. He's not going to lose his diehards. He's not going to lose the guys that are beholden to PBC and have been for a while. But there are going to be other networks. I'm sure there's deals being done right now. So you're going to see I believe you're going to see another network come into the fray besides Amazon, because there just isn't enough dates on Amazon.
For PBC.
For PBC, right.
Yeah, so I agree with that.
There's got to be another network to come on for PBC. Yeah. So like I said, I think they're going to lose some fighters.
Right.
Not many. Not the big ones. Not the ones that have been with Al for a long time, been with PBC for a while. But I do believe we're going to see another network, if not two, come into this, because there's just way too many fighters on the payroll for PBC not to have the outlets that are there, because Amazon's just not going to have enough dates.
I totally agree. From everything I'm seeing, there's going to be another network announced soon. Guys like Danny Garcia is rumored to be fighting Conor Benn. So guys like that who are maybe towards the end of their careers, already made their millions with PBC, they might be set free. But also, like, some of the guys below contender status, you might see showing up on other shows. But I do think it's going to be back to business as usual second half of the year, just getting a very slow start for PBC, but it's going to pick up really quick. People I was talking to all weekend, you know, feeling around, asking around at the Garden, at the weigh-in and stuff. It's like, yeah, everything's just going to happen so quick. Like, all of a sudden, they're going to be right back into the schedule, right back into the swing of things, and it's slow now, but it's going to be a big time.
It's your transition time, that's all.
Yep. EVZSZ, what a name, on YouTube. Who are some fighters you believe to have the potential to be the face of boxing over the course of the next decade or so? I will start. I have wrote down a few, and it just happened to be a lot of top rank guys because they're really good at making stars. Emiliano Vargas, Abdullah Mason, Bruce Carrington, Xander Zayas. This is a PBC signed guy, Kermal Motan. He signed with Mayweather. Mayweather's, he's already putting him on some PBC cards. Those are just some that come to mind right away. But Abdullah Mason had a huge knockout 2 weekends ago.
Dude, he's Carrington, good.
Yeah, he's 17.
He's developing fast.
Scary.
Top
Rank has two of the best prospects in boxing right now. Bruce Carrington and Abdullah Mason.
Mason, I don't know what happened. He's been eating well. He turned into a man in this fight. Like, looking at his back and his body, he's changed dramatically. He's only 17, or, you know, so forget it. That kid's got a big upside. I agree with you. He's going to be a star. Xander Zayas, I think, has a superstar quality to him, and he has the Puerto Rican background. The sport always has a Puerto Rican star.
Yeah.
You know, and so we need someone to step into that position. For a while, it looked like it was going to be Edgar Belenga. Kind of fumbled the ball on that one. So Xander, I think, is that guy. And not only does Xander have the star quality where he can smile, he can talk. He actually did it the international for the fights that night. I heard he did amazing.
He looked great.
And, you know, so he's got that. He's got so much to bring to the sport. He's been around for a long time, the amateur pedigree, and he can fight. And they're pushing a tough schedule. So listen, that's certainly Xander Zayas going to be a star. But I think the next face of boxing is going to be David Benavidez. I think he's the guy to take over the crown after Canelo. I think he's going to have a nice run for a bunch of years because he's still young, he's still improving, and he's willing to fight the toughest guys out there. So, and he's another one. We've interviewed him on Pro Box a bunch of times. Dude, he's an awesome, awesome interview.
Oh, great.
Very, very smart guy, really well-spoken, really respectful.
He says everything you want to hear.
Everything. He says everything you want to hear from a champion.
He needs like 70% of it, which is a lot more than any other boxer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he's awesome. He's very, very well-trained, well-trained media-wise. I'm thinking of like guys, I went with a lot of prospects, but yeah, Benavidez is a pretty good bet. Devin Haney, if you want to get into guys that are already like champs, already like at that level. But especially if Benavidez, once, say it's at 168, let's say he gets the Canelo fight and beats him, or he doesn't get the Canelo fight and beats Morel, and then he goes to 175 and he fights the winner of Bivol Beterbiev and he beats them, then you're looking at a guy that's like, there's
bona fide face of boxing, superstar,
top 5 pound for pound, Mexican, good smile, can talk. Yeah, that's a good call. I like that a lot, and he's got a nice path to do that. At Homer, our guy on Twitter, he's a big time listener of the show for years. In his view, what are the top 3 to 5 Chris Algieri performances to show someone not familiar with Chris's career? And I said, ooh, Chris is really going to like this one.
Manuel Taylor. Yeah. Was one of my favorite performances. Yes, obviously the Provotnikov fight. Even though a loss, Amir Khan, really good fight. Tommy Coyle was a really fun fight. We got into this conversation with Sean Porter the other day, because he wasn't really that familiar with a lot of my fights. And he said, he's like, you know, I kind of caught Chris on the tail end. He's like, I don't really
watch you with the sorry, I'm not familiar with your work.
Basically. But
you're like, what the hell?
Well, you know, it is Sean also, you know, until he started commentating, wasn't a fan of boxing.
He's the one of those guys.
Who, he's one of those guys didn't watch.
That's
fight.
Who I saw this weekend. Tim Bradley.
Tim Bradley spoke to Tim.
Loves our show. Loves our channel. We're talking about pro box, talking about everything. He's hilarious. But keep going.
Who's the other one? Our CompuBox record-setting fight, the 10 rounder where I threw like 1,100 punches.
Pulling it up right now, actually. I got the database.
Jose Pedraza. No, Jose Peralta. Jose Peralta back in 20, what was that, 17? No, I was probably, no, 2012, 2013.
I have it up
that
here.
That was a fun fight. Fun
those
fight.
Those are the three Chris Algieri performances that.
So I would say, Peralta, Taylor, Khan, obviously Provodnikov, and Coyle. Those are my, and you got to see the full spectrum of my career in terms of what styles I can make. People are like, oh, he's a pure boxer. You got to watch. If you didn't watch my career, you would say I'm a boxer. But if you watched it in totality, I was walking guys down, beating them up at the end of my career. So I became a pressure fighter later on because I wasn't going to get any decisions anymore. The judges weren't paying attention.
Against Peralta, you threw 1,081 punches in 10 rounds.
Yeah, 1,100 punches.
371 punches.
Almost hit the 400 club. When you said 300 club is tough.
Yeah. 400 club is even rarefied air. From the fifth round, you landed 42 punches. The seventh round, you landed 50 punches. 50.
Yeah.
Eighth round, 46. Ninth round, 41. You finished the show 48 of 135 in round 10.
135 in the 10th round of a fight that was back and forth. And people are like, wow, why, was that the plan to be so busy? I was like, no, the guy was in my face all night long. And actually, so every time we were at a press conference, the weigh-in, he got in my face. We got into shoving matches the whole way through.
Was it your nipples?
No, I didn't touch my nipples. Like I said, I would have punched him in the face at the press conference. But he was trying to get after me the whole time, talking shit at the press conference. Man, it was that was a fun one.
Nice, Chris. That was impressive. This guy still got it, man. Marvelous 004. How much weed do you think Bob Arum smokes a month?
Oh man, I mean, I've been around him.
He's
know
on
I
edibles
know.
Now.
He's on. He does. It's edibles. It's not a smoking thing. It's an edible thing. But he says that, you know, every night, sleeping, traveling, dude. That guy flies all over the world all the time. Jet lag is not a thing for him. He is incredible. That man is indestructible, and I believe that those gummies are a big secret weapon of his.
Yes, I know for a fact he's a edibles guy, and he says that weed is like the fountain of youth. Everyone always asks.
It's no secret. Everybody.
Yeah, like he said. I think he said smoking weed and not giving a shit. Just
that's the key.
Someone asked him recently. I guess
that's such a Bob. That's such a Bob answer.
How much money he's had? He's been wealthy since for the last like 50 years, right? Since in his 40s.
Yeah.
Promoted Ali.
He was wealthy before that, though. He was a very successful lawyer.
Yeah,
very successful lawyer before he got into boxing. He's the most interesting man I've ever been around. He's awesome.
You can say what you want about him. I know there's a faction of people that don't like him or don't like his business practices, but you cannot deny how impressive it is that he shows up in Japan. He'll show up in Saudi. First fight of the night in I didn't see him in New York, but the first
and he's
fight
tweeting.
Of the night. Oh yeah, but it's not him.
But I've seen him. I mean, I've seen him on his phone.
Right. But I'm just saying he's first fight of the night. He's in his seat, you know, first fight of the night. It's only like 6 p.m. Like first fight. No one else is there. So the guy loves boxing. And when he is gone and it's going to be a void. Two Beers Podcast. Great, great show. Go check them out. Who's a tougher hypothetical opponent for Devin Haney? A focused Teofimo at 140 or Boots Ennis at 147?
Good question. I think both are really tough.
That's focus Teofimo at 140.
Focus Teofimo is a nightmare.
Which is at 140, that's where Haney, I feel like, is going to be for the next couple of years. Or 147, that's a whole other animal with Boots Ennis, who is a career welterweight. I guess it comes down to how much do you believe in Boots Ennis, or how much do you believe in Teofimo at 140?
The issue is that we haven't seen Boots enough. We haven't seen him in with top tier guys. We've seen Tio in with Lomachenko and Taylor, and we've seen how phenomenal. But we also see how bad he is. But when you say focused, yeah, I mean, I think a truly focused, top notch display by Tio beats Haney. So I'm gonna go with Tio because there's too many question marks for Boots. We all know Boots is awesome. But guys, you got to be in tough fights with real guys to really show. And he hasn't been there yet. Listen, in 6 months when he fights and he beats some tip top guys, this is going to look dumb, but it doesn't matter. He hasn't fought him yet, so we can't say.
God, I wish he would be active because talking about facing boxing.
He wants to be.
Talk about face of boxing. That guy has all the potential to be it. It's just one of the most mismanaged, strange careers, Boots Ennis. I hope it changes.
He's one of my favorite guys stylistically to watch today.
He's got everything.
Everything. I mean,
like, literally every punch, every movement, fluid.
He reminds me of a more fundamental Terrence Crawford.
Right.
Super athletic, but also very fundamental. He's my favorite style to watch in the world today.
I just want to see more of them. Four corner boxing sent a lot of questions, but I picked out some of the better ones. Which promoter and or network development show do you believe is going to do the best job to provide quality cards, and who are fighters in the world that we should keep an eye on? I'll answer this to start. Where I'm biased, I think MVP, the show that I work on, is one of the better ones. And obviously, Chris, you're going to say Pro Box, and rightfully so. Like, they are the developmental show right now. So I think just because we work for them, maybe the bias is showing. But I think Most Valuable Promotions over on DAZN and Pro Box are two of the developmental shows that are most dedicated right now to doing consistent shows.
Pro Box developmental show, development, and it's a network proving ground. It is not a promotion. So they're not signing fighters the way that you would think they are. And it's not your traditional boxing promotion. You can't really lump them in with the Top Ranks and the PBCs and the Matchrooms, but it is a developmental ground and network to provide places for these fighters to fight and make good fights. And they are always good fights. And
Chris bought Boxing Scene. So we're going to see Chris Algieri's byline on Boxing Scene now?
Yeah, of course. But
really?
That's nothing. Pro Box doesn't care. They don't care who wins. So they care about making good fights.
That's
which
good.
Is why, yeah, developmental ground. I wouldn't say it's a developmental promotion. It's a network and a proving ground for young fighters. And to that same point, the reason I'm not going to give you names of guys that are broke is we don't have that many guys that are really signed to us that you're going to only see on us. We bring guys in from whoever. Like right. That card we just put together, Picasso and Cardenas, we don't, you know, Pro Box doesn't promote those guys. They just knew that they would make a good fight together, and they did. So we matched them up.
Who's the DiBella guy? He's fighting on one of the cards. I saw him tweet about it. He's going to be a DiBella fighter coming up on Pro Box soon. I know Myquan Williams fought for you guys recently.
Yeah, he looked really good.
A bunch of his fights. There was another guy I forgot.
We got Paldo coming up. Is it Paldo?
I don't know who it is. Yeah, I would say
Justin Paldo Madueno is coming up next, which is an awesome fight.
I would say Pro Box. I would say MVP. I would say Overtime Boxing, what they're doing.
But developmental promotion, it's Top Rank, man. Look, you just named all those guys who are going to be future stars. Like, in terms of developmental and guys who are the number one builder of future stars has always been Top Rank.
I think this guy was asking about the show, like the developmental shows, like the
club
shows, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because Top Rank basically does two in one night, right? Like the pre-shows, the ones that
5 o'clock really, it started on Friday.
Yeah, those they're full of all their prospects, and those are basically it's a club show before championship boxing.
Yeah. Let's get to Samatoa on Twitter. With what's going on in the boxing scorecards, would it be better to do live scoring round per round instead of waiting to the end? I hate live scoring. I've been asked this a lot. I don't like anything that promotes a fighter taking his foot off the gas pedal. So if they're up and they look up in the eighth round, it's a 12-round fight, and they're up 6-1 or whatever the math is, and they're going to coast, that's going to make for a very bad fight.
And guys will. There's way too much money. There's way too much money on the line, people.
Dude, a win and
a loss is millions of dollars. Millions of dollars.
So you don't like open scoring?
No, hate it.
That reason, or what's your reason?
No, so my reason is twofold. One, that's the rational, you know, kind of objective reason why, because you're gonna get guys that are gonna change. But also, I kind of go just historically. You know, like I'm an old school guy. I got that pugilist mentality. It's like, listen, man, you got to fight, and you fight as hard as you can, and you know, and yeah, you can feel you're winning a fight and whatever. But you know, you've got to be able to. Sway the subjective feelings of those around, the judges obviously at first, but also the fans, man. That's important.
Well, there's got to be fights where you want your corner to tell you the truth, right? You don't want your corner to BS you. So you know when you're down, right, as a fighter. You know if you're losing rounds, or at least you want your corner to let you know. Do you need, like, open scoring to let you know that you have to go out there and win the last five rounds to win?
I think it just takes the heart out of it a little bit. Like, you just gotta, you know, dig down. Like, but and to your same points, like, you know, that last round, like, man, I don't care if I was up or not. I went out and tried, went balls to the wall in the last round to try and prove a point, make an exclamation point. Every round counts. You know, a 10-9 is that's an expensive thing to give up. So, you got to go for it. You got to fight hard. Yeah, you got to be smart, but you know, you got to do it. Yeah, that's what boxing is. You know, you got to be a smart warrior.
I know you say you're old school, so am I in a certain way. I like, you know, pushing the sport forward, but I don't know how you would feel about this. WBC President Mauricio Suleiman is exploring ways to prevent a Fury versus Usyk controversy. Suleiman wants to introduce 6 or 7 judges for this fight, where you would have 6 or 7 judges, and then you would weed out some of the bad cards, and the 3 most consistent scorecards would determine a winner. I've heard of this notion being tossed out there. I've heard of this being maybe floated around at smaller fights to kind of test it. I don't think it should be used on the biggest heavyweight fight of the last 20 years. But the thought process is, if we can get 5 or 6 judges, 7 judges, we find the 3 most consistent cards, then that we can weed out that one bad scorecard, the guy who had one bad night. That's what Suleiman was trying to say. Both fighters shot it down, of course. Personally, Chris, I think it's hard enough to find 3 judges that are good. So now we're going to find 6 or 7 in one night? No, I just don't think it's feasible, number one.
So I would need to be troubleshot. I would have to see it in action on cards that aren't as important. But also, I mean, the positive is you could weed out the corruption. It'd be that much more difficult to compromise 3 out of 7 judges rather than, you know, 1 or 2 out of 3. So there is that, because there is that in this sport too. Let's be realistic, guys. So yeah, I don't know. It's a novel idea, but it's nowhere near being able to be used in championship fights.
Yeah, I get the theory. I get the science of it.
Absolutely.
I understand what they can do, but okay, we're really going to get 7 judges when it's hard enough to find 3 that are competent. I don't know. I'm not 100% believe that.
It's hard to find 3 competent judges, let alone 7.
Weber163 on YouTube. Question for Algeri. Not that you'd avoid any fighter. Did you regularly weigh the pros and cons before taking a fight? Maybe financially, stylistically, or both? Thanks for the content and expertise from you both.
Awesome question. And I have a real world example. So before the Provotnikov fight, and it was around, I guess it was right around, I was getting ready to fight Taylor. And I kind of had the option to fight either one of either Lucas Matisse or Ruslan Provotnikov. So I had Lucas Matisse for a Golden Boy card, and I was making more money for that. I'm not going to give dollar amounts, but there was more money offered for the Matisse fight.
And do you have a title at the time?
No. Okay. And Ruslan Provotnikov was considerably less money on a co-promoted Top Rank card. But there was a title on the line. He was coming off of decimating Mike Alvarado in Denver to take the WBO.
Hi, Mike.
Yeah, to take the WBO super lightweight title. So the title was on the line. So I took less money with probably a more dangerous guy. I think Lucas was very good. The Machine was excellent fighter, but I think he could have been outboxed, and he wasn't as just damaging. Definitely good puncher, great puncher. It was a fight that I always wanted. And I actually tried to revisit that fight later on. I was talking to Golden Boy guys about that. But no, I ended up taking the less money title fight against the more dangerous guy based on the title.
Well, that paid off, though.
Yeah. Yeah, it could have went really badly, but yeah, it worked out.
Well, Pacquiao, and that, so that worked out. So
well, I could have got a broken eye and not a belt. You know, that would have been broken, so I would have got less money, belt. A broken face, and no belt. That would have been really, really bad.
Probably wouldn't have been the co-host of this podcast either.
Yeah, probably not. Probably not. I would.
What a decision! What a decision to take that knee in this first round.
Yeah, I'd probably still be in school right now.
It could all change in one night. That's the beauty of boxing and this crazy thing about it. It's
yes and no.
Singular performance.
So this question is so good, because it shows you how much would have had to have changed, like how many decisions needed to be made to get to that night that could change everything.
Crazy, man. Wild stuff.
Cool question.
Really good one. Troy Perry on YouTube asked us, hey guys, Personally, I hope Spence has a comeback fight for someone like Lubin or Castaño sometime this summer. Meanwhile, hopefully Bud can fight Zhu. If Errol looks good in his comeback, then I'd like to see him versus Bud Zhu winner. Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks for all the content. I would love that plan.
Yeah, it's a good plan. I mean, I hope that Errol can get it back together. I don't know. I know there's been speculation lately. He's putting up the deuces sign for, you know, on his Twitter, and people are like, oh, does that mean he's done with the sport? We don't really know, but it would be nice to see him back, you know, and get back to, you know, being healthy and his winning ways. I don't know if we're going to see that. But to see him in with these other guys coming up, it's the natural progression of what happens to fighters when they tend to go past their prime is, you know, they become the opponents of the X guys coming up. So Tim Zhu could be that kind of guy. Lubin makes sense. Also got to see what weight class Spence is going to come back in.
I think he comes now that the Crawford fight is out the window. I think he comes back at 154. So obviously he only stuck around at 147 to get that Crawford fight. So he fights at 154. He could beat a Lubin or a Castaño and get that win. And then it's up to him how much longer he wants to go. If he wants to stick around and get that Bud rematch coming off of a few wins, all right, now it's a little more marketable. It was never marketable next because of the beating that he took. But if he could take time off a little bit, I know this whole career has been taking time off. He takes some time off now. He comes back at 154, gets a nice win, builds up some momentum. Then, yeah, there's a nice little round robin that can go off at 154.
I don't see that Bud fight happening. I don't think Bud's going to be that long.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of things. Bud needs to fight someone. I talk about, like, he's just got no dance partner. The best fighter in the world doesn't have a logical fight. It's weird.
And the face of boxing has a logical fight, but won't take it.
If that's not boxing in a nutshell, where you can't be forced to fight anyone, there's no one telling you who to fight, there's no leagues, there's no schedules. Everything has to align. That's why 2023.
Poor Crawford, man. He's putting himself out there to jump up like 5 weight classes. Like, just willing to fight anyone, anywhere. Just give me the biggest fight possible.
Can't get it. Matt, you know, if PBC is not receiving rights fees from Amazon Prime Video, are they going to do every single card as a pay-per-view? Well, they are receiving a budget. If you follow Steven Espinosa on Twitter, he has been saying, of course there's a budget. Of course Amazon is giving PBC money. So he's a pretty good source. That's what I've read. That's what I've heard. It'd be a shame if every single one was pay-per-view, but I believe from what I've seen and what I've heard is that there will be funding from Amazon to PBC, a budget, you know, like ESPN gives Top Rank $90 million a year to make fights. I don't know if it's going to be $90 million, but it should be a significant amount of money to stage these events. What else we got? That's only I had written down. I had put out a tweet this morning. What happens to PBC if they can't guarantee funds for Canelo's next fight? I don't know. It's way above my pay scale. This is a weird one. Have Chris explain if, when weight matters. For example, Canelo to Kovalev didn't matter, but then against Bivol it did. I don't believe weight will matter for Crawford if you fought Canelo because the skills are so high. Can you dive into that? That's just skills, right?
It's more than just skills because style. So using the example that they used was it's skills, it's style, and it's youth. Kovalev's old when Canelo fought him. He also fought him very close to the war that he had with what's his name? The British Yard. So him and Anthony Yard went to war. And then, like, I think it was like 3 months later, he's fighting Canelo. And if you're close to Kovalev, you know that after fights, he's Russian, he tends to hit the vodka and gains a lot of weight and has a lot of trouble. And normally, I know this from working with his own coaches, he usually goes away to camp just to make weight for the first couple months. And he has a very long camp. Just to shed pounds and then works on his boxing after that and his sparring to get closer. I don't think there was enough time for that from in between the Anthony Yard fight and the Canelo fight. So a lot of it was very smart maneuvering on Team Canelo's side that they were able to handpick a guy. You know, it's kind of similar to what Sugar Ray Leonard did. He kind of handcuffed some of his opponents. He did the Hagler, made it a smaller ring, bigger gloves. Bigger ring, bigger gloves, less time, less rounds. You know, so there are ways to maneuver things. And also you see fighters and they do rehydration clauses. There are ways to handicap at the negotiating table that can really be helpful.
Especially when you're Canelo.
Right. Well, yeah, when you're in the driver's seat, there's a different thing. And then with Bivol, Bivol was young. Bivol was younger, but also stylistically. I don't care what weight they fight at. I don't think Canelo ever beats Bivol. That was a really poor decision to jump up to fight him. Just stylistically, he's just a nightmare for him, for Canelo. So I don't think the weight mattered in that one. I think that was skills. And with the Kovalev fight, Kovalev was winning that fight too. He was beating Canelo.
He was winning. People forget
that. He was winning that fight and then, you know, fell apart late. But yeah, I don't know. I weight, honestly, it's weight's a tricky thing. It definitely can affect certain guys, but a lot of it has to do with style.
Yeah, styles. I that's something I'm learning more and more, calling more fights, studying the game a lot more, is the styles are everything. Last one here. Are big names fighting once a year because A, networks, promoters are struggling to come up with the money, or B, they're asking too much in guarantees? I think it's both. I think it's definitely both. I think a lot of fighters are, I wouldn't say overpaid, but are getting paid to a point where it's like, I don't have to fight 3 or 4 times a year.
Problem is market shifts, right? When the market's really high and guys are getting paid a ton, and then the market shifts and there's a down regulation because of networks falling out or promotions changing, whatever. And then the fighters expect that same kind of money and then it's not there. They tend to be like, oh, well, F this, sit out. And you're seeing that these guys, like the heavyweights, they were all sitting out. Why? Because there wasn't the money being paid like it was back in the past when the market was higher. Then Saudi comes in. Money's available. Now these guys are all fighting. So that's proof to power that's what's going on.
Yeah, it's definitely both. There's definitely a feeling where these guys are getting so much that they don't have to fight more than twice. Every fighter's on a 2-fight schedule. Canelo did that four in one year, and he was looked at as like a freaking god. And then there's not enough dates to go around. There really isn't. Like it's not really, you know, rocket science to figure out if, you know, the networks are aligned with the promoters and they have to put on a certain amount of fights and they'll spread out a fighter over a course of a year to fight twice rather than 3 times because they have the X amount of dates and vice versa. So that's what we're seeing. But great questions from everyone. Everyone that
we have very intelligent listeners.
Really do. It's nice to meet them in person, and it's also nice to interact with them, whether it was on YouTube. We got questions sent to us on Twitter. We got questions sent to us on Instagram. So good stuff, man. Good stuff. What's going on this week? What's going on this weekend? What did we got in the boxing? We got a few fights. I'll watch Berlanga.
We got Nakatani on ESPN. We got Berlanga on DAZN. Good. Solid fights.
Solid fights, solid episode. I hope everyone enjoyed it. And we'll be back next week with even more hard-hitting analysis coming your way. Remember to protect yourself at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs unless you're sending us great questions for the mailbag. Good night.